Welcome to the FNO InsurTech Podcast, a place where movers and shakers from all points within the insurance ecosystem gather and discuss all things InsurTech. Here are your hosts, Lee Boyd and Rob Beller.
So, I've been reading about how in the calculation of inflation, that homeowner insurance is not included, right? It's not calculated into that number that comes out, you know, every month, every week, okay, whatever. And it's interesting, it doesn't include that because, as you know, homeowner insurance has gone up substantially, right?
In every state.
It used to be one of the great deals. First of all, a lot of people don't even know how much they pay for it because it's in an escrow through their mortgage, right?
Right, right.
So it's not like they write a separate check for it. They write their mortgage check for however much money every month. And inside of that is their taxes and their insurances.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't know how much their property tax is frequently, and they don't know how much their insurance cost is frequently. And, but like I know because we're in the business, right? And
I pay attention every month.
And certainly, you know, if your home is paid for, you know, or if you just pay attention to it. Anyways, the point is that it's gone up substantially. It really used to be a remarkably good deal, particularly compared to its closest relative, auto insurance, right?
Okay, yeah.
And I don't know if you have this in Texas, but here in California, our auto insurance has gotten quite expensive.
Yes, I just added a 16-year-old driver to my Texas insurance.
Oh, ooh.
So, yeah. I'm sitting here trying to do the math. I think that my three automobile insurance equals a year worth of homeowner insurance.
Oh, really? That's all?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think they're equivalent. But you're in a state that has to have high homeowner premiums. You have to.
We do. We have high homeowner premiums.
You're a main hail state.
Yeah, we are. And our deductibles or higher. We have 2% deductibles. Most people have a 2% deductible, 5-10% on the coast. You don't find a lot of 1% as much. There's no flat rate, $250 or $500. But you were talking about the price of insurance. I don't think a lot of people look at home values. Like, wow, in the past 10 years, my home doubled, right? My home's doubled. Why in the world is my insurance so high? When I bought my home, my insurance was $2,000 a month, and now it's $4,000 a month.
Right.
And they don't correlate the value of the home to the insurance. I had a friend the other day at soccer.
Sure.
My daughter's soccer thing. He was like, my home insurance has doubled since I bought it. And I said, oh, how much has the value of your home? It's doubled. But my homeowner insurance doubled. I said, it's kind of a one-to-one here, man.
Right.
It's relative. What do you expect? I said, don't you want to build a home back for the value that it is? Mm-hmm. But that's something that a lot of people need to look at their insurance and make sure that they are properly insured to value. Because if it hasn't updated from when you bought your home 15 years ago, you might not have enough coverage.
Correct.
You might not have enough coverage.
Correct. And that was another thing I found in this process I've been going through over the last year or two of trying to maximize my insurance dollar, which is not a way of saying trying to get the cheapest price, but trying to have the best all around package. Certainly you can shop insurance on price, right? But I think myself, and certainly probably you too, people who understand the subtle nuances and the differences in insurance, you understand like just what we're talking about, how you can be screwed.
Yeah.
And you think you're insured, right? It's very interesting when I've been shopping my car insurance primarily because it's gotten very expensive.
For 5 years. For five years.
That's beside the, The length of time is not important. What's important is that I'm keeping up with the market. I'm doing good my for research you. For FNO InsurTech.
I appreciate it. Ever switched in the past 5 years? Have you switched to a new auto insurance provider?
Well, first of all, that's a very personal question. Okay. Second of all, no, I have not.
Okay.
Would you like to know why? Would you like to know the story?
Yeah.
Do you have a choice?
Is it hard? Is it hard to switch insurance?
No.
I've never switched insurance.
No, it's easy.
I don't know.
It's easy. I'll tell you what happened. And I'll mention names because I don't care. So,
okay,
we've had Safeco auto insurance.
Isn't it? Big in California.
For a long time. Safeco in California. We have Safeco for our home and our autos. And no problems. And primarily we have no problems because we've had no claims. None. Zero. And so I went out and I started shopping. And the first thing that I learned about shopping auto insurance is comparing apples to apples is really hard. Because like uninsured motorist coverage is an example, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it can have a value of like 100,000 or 300,000 or 500,000 uninsured motorists. And maybe one company only has certain limits that they sell. And the next company has different limits that they sell. So I don't know what the price impact of uninsured motorists is offhand. But if you have $250,000 of uninsured motorists with one company, you want to compare fairly, you have to have the same thing with the next one.
Right.
And so one of the things I noticed in comparison is they're frequently not available in a uniform manner, right? And so
you can't compare them apples to apples because it's different. I agree.
You can't compare them apples to apples. So what ended up happening was I found somebody at Safeco who was super helpful. My agent.
Good.
And we really dug into the policy and each piece of the policy that had pricing impact, right? And what we did was we line by line almost on the coverage, adjusted it, and my price dropped substantially. You know, one of the biggest impacts on my pricing of everything?
Deductible.
How many miles I drive.
Okay.
I drive a very small amount of miles in a year. I live.
So is your policy able to absorb the amount of miles you drive? You
yes.
were able to say, I only drive this amount?
Yes. And I believe that they do that because it's part of it's a competitive thing that they're forced into doing now. Because as you know, you can buy usage-based insurance, right?
You can.
And so, if you don't drive much, you should get a lower rate. And there's companies that do that. And Safeco now offers that. The interesting thing was they made me verify it and go out and give them proof that I actually drive as little as I do, right? Which I did. It was a little work, but I did it. And it provided, I'm going to think what this was, almost a 25% decrease in my rate.
Wow.
Now we're good drivers. We have good records. We don't have tickets, all that other stuff. We don't have a 16-year-old child who ruins everything for you. Don't worry, it ends eventually. So that's why I ended up staying with Safeco. I've always been happy with them. I've never had an issue.
Do you think being able to go to an agent assisted you instead of a true only digital platform? Do you think you might have switched it ultimately if it was up to you solely? I read something from Kate Terry online, surround insurance. She had said, You know, we really thought it was a true digital market, and we kind of underestimated. I might be putting words in our mouth. I apologize. We underestimated the importance of that human interaction. Do you think that you might have made a different choice, an uneducated choice, if it was a digital only product?
Sure.
I guess I'm asking, is there value to you in having an agent?
100%. Because for me especially, right? And you too. If you got on the phone with an agent, you have the advantage of understanding what a policy is, what insurance is, what the different things that you're being insured for, what you're not insured for. You understand most of that. Now, the agent may be more educated than you, but you're like, let's just say you're 70, he's 100% educated. You're 70% educated. The average consumer in America is 20% educated. Not much, not very little. When it comes to knowing what the heck the average person is talking about with insurance, it's a small number.
I can tell you the few times I've had a claim, I know everything there is about insurance claims and my policy. I've read my policy a lot. First thing I do, I pick up that phone and I call that agent. I want that human on my side. I want to be able to talk to someone. I want to know, am I interpreting this right? You know, what really should I do? I think that the agent is so, we've talked about this on the podcast all the time. The value of the agent was severely underestimated.
It
back
was.
In 2015 to 2018, people thought we can disrupt instead of empowering the agent to even be stronger. Give them the digital tools, give you an option, but you cannot really at this point replace that human, because it is a difficult product to buy. It's hard. It's hard to understand, and there's a lot of options now, and you don't know.
Right. And like what I'm saying, it's hard to compare.
Yeah.
Right. There are subtle differences. There are subtle differences that are consequential. Right.
I did that. I pulled up a couple of them the other day, maybe a month or two ago, and I couldn't understand really what I'm comparing, because there's not a graph. It's not a, you know, this is what I'm charging on this line and this line for all three. It's hard. It's hard.
So, yeah. And also, on a service level, before I say that, you know, Kate, it's interesting you bring up Kate Terry, because I remember her interview. She was a great interview.
Yeah.
And,
she was great.
And she's become she's on the circuit, right? She's on the speaking circuit and conference circuit. And Kate told us when we originally talked that they were going to use agents, because part of the play was kids that they wanted to write insurance with. When I say kids, I mean maybe 30 and under, something like that. The younger demographic that they were after, their parents had agents,
right?
And they wanted those kids to be able to go to that, to their parents' agent, and get the kind of coverage, that specific kind of coverage that they were looking for. Do you remember that?
That's a good memory. I remember that now that you say that.
So they were with agents from the beginning. And but I do agree with you. Because they're not only helpful in the process of buying, they're also specifically important in a claim.
Can we talk about, is it okay we talk about another subject?
Yeah, do it.
So Rob, I went to the National Flood Conference this week.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
What is more exciting than the National Flood Conference?
Pretty much everything. Everything is more exciting.
But you know, there were 844 of my closest friends.
Okay.
We all sat in a room. It's a large room, and they talk about it. And the main keys are, we need to sell more flood policies to protect more people. We need to get high. That was kind of one of the things. You got to get high.
What's that
means you want to build high, right? You want to build.
Oh, I
not,
see.
not get high, but you want to build up.
Okay.
So build on. So those were two things that I learned out of that. Right. And it was a very good conference. I sat through the sessions and I learned a lot, but I sat through a session on AI and I thought it was so fascinating. It was a gentleman, I cannot remember his name. He got up and spoke for about 15 minutes on AI. And he talked about the use of ChatGPT. He talked about kind of what Aaron Bronco did for us, where you can have a voice come in and it sounds like a human voice. And then he talked about the implications of it on claims and how you can start doing falsified claims. You could have a big problem. You could have AI file a claim on your behalf or be a witness on your behalf.
Give you the pictures that you need.
So that was where I'm going. He talked about the videos and the pictures and how you can, you know, let's say you have a video of a car fire. He did a car fire. He said, here's a video of a car fire. Looks real, right? It looks so real. He goes, it's completely fake. And what people are doing, you can take these videos and you upload them to your social media. And when you upload them to your social media, it scrapes away all the metadata. All the metadata goes away. And so you say, oh, I don't have that video anymore, but I uploaded it to my TikTok. You can see it. And now the adjuster, whoever's going to go on there, and you don't have the data to tell if it's real or fake. You can doctor these photos. They can't even be real. So it really opened my eyes. I'm a positive guy. How can AI teach me? There are people out there using AI for bad. And we have to be aware of that. Aware of that, Rob.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look,
it was so interesting.
There are initiatives throughout different levels of government in most countries in the world to try to, rein it in. I think that like many things, like oil.
Yeah.
I mean, we, embraced oil in whenever it was, the 1800s. And we just charged full speed ahead with it. Now, then you could say there was a lot less information generally available in the world, but look where we are today as a result of oil. I mean, regardless of your politics, the fact of the matter is
we have a reliance on oil.
We have an enormous reliance on oil oil has tremendous dirtying problems, pollution problems that are real, that are a function of oil. How far it goes, whatever. But that's a human tendency. And so here we are today. The genie is out of the bottle on AI, right?
Yeah.
You'll never. It's because it's already everybody's already in it and on it and writing code about it. So we've never encountered anything technologically like this, what it's going to do, like which just you're talking about one example. Think about what clever criminals or people who are inclined can do. Make happen. It's mind-boggling what AI can do. I use ChatGPT all the time to ask questions.
Yeah, right? like a search engine. Yeah,
like a search engine that communicates with me, right? Like or like a brilliant person, and I've caught it hallucinating. It can hallucinate, right? And so
it can.
And you could accept a hallucination as correct, and the right circumstance.
Yes.
I mean,
you can.
How much should it be regulated?
Yeah.
How much?
And who should regulate it?
Practically, can it be?
Right.
And the answer is no. The genie's out of the
bottle. I use it.
Just hold on tight.
I use it.
Hold on tight.
I use it all the time for a learning tool and a brainstorming and a springboard. I'll use it as a brainstorming session for, hey, I need to do this project. What are some ways I can do this project that have been proven successful? What are some articles I could read about this subject to help me understand it? With this article, can you dumb this down so I can truly understand what it's saying? And then you can communicate. It's almost like I have Bill Gates sitting over there and I'm communicating with one of the smartest people around, and it's giving me feedback. It's a really cool tool. But you hit something on the head the other day. I just have to say this before we leave. If you were at the beginning of the internet, which this is like being at the beginning of the internet, what would you do? How would you have handled it? What would you do knowing the internet became the internet? Mm-hmm. I truly believe, like you do, that we are at the beginning correct, of a new internet stage, a new phenomenon to
major,
take off.
A life-changing technological breakthrough.
Yeah. So what can you do to take you and to springboard you along with this in your own work? And when we think about insurance and technology and you know, this is a time to really think into how can you do the best and take advantage of the time.
So one of my favorite stories about graduate school was when I was in graduate school, it was the mid-90s, and the internet was there. Many people didn't even call it the internet. Email was still this really rough thing that wasn't used extensively. It was starting to be used. Anyways, so we start graduate school. First class I have, first semester, or early, was cost accounting. Now, cost accounting is tough. It's a hard class, especially if you're a dodo like me. And so, in it, the first day says, well, we're going to focus on this thing, information superhighway, internet, whatever you want to call it. That's what we're going to focus on. And we're going to have everybody in the class put a web page on the internet.
Ooh.
And that was like, oh my God, so thrilling.
Oh yeah. My God, I remember my first web page.
And we had a competition. This is 1995. We had a competition in the class to see who could make the best website for this, that, and the other thing. And I mean, you're talking about a time when there wasn't a Toyota.com or a Walmart.com. This is, I mean, there might have been Amazon, but this is
1999.
This is early history. Okay.
Yeah.
And like you're saying, what if you would have been knowing what you know today?
Mm-hmm.
What would you have done? Right. And it always makes me laugh. And when I talk to my old friends from grad school, I laugh. We all laugh about the fact that there we were at the early days when the whole thing was wide open. It was driven.
It was yours.
And in large part, it was driven by porn. Right. And,
correct.
And, the unbelievable things we could have done that just passed us by. And,
as someone else said, you know what I think? Yeah.
And so here we are again. It feels like that to me. It feels like that time. Now, there's so much more technological infrastructure today. There's all these companies out there that already have tremendous technological capability and ability and knowledge. And they're going to they're going to grab AI quick and make it grow. But what about the individual entrepreneur, right?
Yeah.
I mean, what kid is out there who's going to do something absolutely spectacular with this?
And you think about Malcolm Gladwell's book, where he talks about Bill Gates being in the right place at the right time.
Right.
And he set up, you know, he was at the school with the computer and he had the time and he was born in the right time and all these things. And there's somebody who is in the right place at the right time using the resources available to him that are going to do amazing things.
Yes. That are that and won't it be and 10, 15, 20 years from now, that kid will be a billionaire, right? A multi-billionaire. 100%. And we'll remember that we had this conversation.
We had this conversation. Maybe he'll come on the, or she'll come on the podcast.
Maybe they'll come on the podcast. That's right. And that's it for today.
Good chatting with you, Rob.